Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, coming to you after the first place New England Revolution put in an impressive performance to take a 2-0 road win in Toronto behind goals from Bobby Wood and DeJuan Jones. I'm Sean Donahue, joined today by Andy Judd from Revs Nation. Andy, how's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a good day. My Bryant Bulldogs are the American East lacrosse champions, so congratulations to them. I also want to quickly thank our listeners for getting us to 100 ratings on iTunes. You heard our call last week and got us there. I really appreciate that. Thanks again for all of our listeners for all their ratings and reviews. Let's jump right into this one. I want to get right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and on their website, AnyRebellion.org. Andy, what was your key takeaway from this one?
My key takeaway here was just as a next man up mentality for New England. I was a little bit curious before the match to see how the Revs were going to line up, especially with Dylan Barrero going out with that unfortunate injury last week. And what we saw was effectively the same formation as they'd played the week before. They swapped in, I think, Esmer. And they swapped in Wood for Renix. But otherwise, it was functionally the same. We've seen the Revs play a lot of different formations this season. You know, they played the 4-4-2, right? They played with two forwards before a number of times. They played a flat 4-4-2, a diamond 4-4-2. And they played a 4-2-3-1 and a 4-3-3. So it was interesting to see them just kind of go with the same strategy, even without their, arguably, I think, their best winger. And to good effect, too. You know, you can't complain too much about the result, especially. But, you know, good performances from Boateng. I thought Esmer had a pretty decent day overall. And, of course, you know, you had Wood come in and get the goal. So I don't think you can complain too much about any of that. And I think it's impressive that they were able to roll out the same basic tactics, even without their best wing player. So, you know, I think that's my key takeaway, is that it's just good overall from the Revs. Just good, a good thing for them to be able to have that flexibility, to have that tactical flexibility to keep rolling out the same general style.
Yeah, and I think the formations looked good 2 weeks in a row, too, despite only getting the tie against Cincinnati. Do you think this is the formation they stick with?
You know, I think it's going to kind of depend. You know, Bruce tends to like to shift formations based upon who's available and who the opponent is a little bit. So he's kind of, you know, he hasn't really settled on anything, I think, basically in his whole time as coach of the Revs. So we'll see. But I think this is kind of his preferred formation for now. And yeah, I think we'll keep seeing it as long as it keeps working.
Yeah, and you talk about next man up mentality. My takeaway actually was inspired by one of the questions we got, which was Mike D on Twitter asking if this was the best depth the Revs have had in the past decade. I'd go one step further and say it's the best depth the Revs have ever had, although I think it's worth noting that league and roster rules made it a lot harder to have this level of depth 15 to 20 years ago, so it's not really a fair comparison. But I would say this is the best depth the Revs have ever had, and I think when you talk about that next man up mentality, it works because this team is so deep. And why is it so deep compared to last year? You know, Romney, Blessing, and Wood were all fantastic additions so far by Bruce Arena. Those are three key spots that the Revolution added depth to. But then on top of that, Noel Buck, Esmer, and you know, we haven't seen as much as Jack P, but they've all stepped up their game a lot this season. So the homegrowns have stepped up. So the combination of adding those three guys, having three homegrowns really step up, has really made this Revs depth fantastic this year, where it wasn't good enough last year. And you know, despite all that, we still haven't seen Tommy McNamara, who was a big part of the Revolution team last year. We haven't seen Nacho Heal. Both of them have been out all season. You know, there's other guys that have been in and out of the lineup. So just the depth of this team has just proven fantastic. When you have a guy like Ejmyr, you know, young guy that can just step in when Dylan Brewer was out. When you have Ima Boateng that has now proven he can be a starter for this team and perform really well. When you have Noel Buck, who, you know, despite there being veterans that can also play that same position, has stepped up and really locked in a starting spot the way he's been playing. It's just a fantastic depth that the Revolution have this year that they haven't had in the past. And, you know, that's why every week when we see somebody out that we're not expecting to be out, or when we see somebody out that's out for a long term, the Revs have still found a way to keep going on and winning. And, you know, it's something that you haven't really seen much of in New England in the past years to have this level of depth.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, having those young homegrowns come up and kind of get them, you know, their feet wet last year, and then kind of be able to continue their development into this year has been absolutely huge for the Revs. And you mentioned those three key off-season signings, and they've all panned out, I would say, just exactly as intended. So we went from a team last year that had kind of so depth, you know, had a lot of top end talent, and then the depth behind it was, you know, okay in places and maybe suspect in others. And I think he really, you know, Bruce really shored up the whole team in the offseason, and those homegrowns really make an impact as well. So it's a good deep team this year.
Yeah, and they've already really needed to test that depth, and it's worked out so far. And I think that gets to the one topic I want to touch on before we got into listener questions, because it is official that Dylan Brewer tore his ACL and was out for the season. It wasn't official when we talked about his injury last week. How do you think this impacts the Revolution this season, and how do you think they compensate? Obviously, they got the win last night, which I think makes us a little bit more hopeful on how things turn out. But that is obviously a key loss for the Revs, right?
Oh, it's a huge loss. You know, we haven't seen a ton of Jack Paniagua this season, and you know, we haven't had to see a lot of him, mostly because Dylan Barrero has been so good, and you can say the same for Ejmyr as well. We haven't seen any of Nacho Hill this year. You know, Tommy McNamara's been injured, so we haven't had to see a ton of depth behind Barrero. But really, there's no one on the roster that I can think of right now that brings that kind of dynamicism that you get from Barrero. You know, he's a guy who's willing to take players on the dribble. He's fast. He's, you know, good on the ball. He takes good shots. And the Revs have players that have some of those qualities, but I don't know that they necessarily have a player that has all of those qualities in the same way. So, you know, I think, of course, the win last night really helps kind of assuage some of the fears that we might be feeling about, you know, can they hack it without him? But I think I won't be surprised, I guess I'll say, to see, you know, a summer signing that attempts to address those issues.
Yeah, especially with all the other injuries the Revs have right now, we still don't know really what we're going to get from Nacho Hill on the Revolution. You know, we saw some flashes from him last season, but with his injury seeming to be long term, we don't know when he's going to come back, and we also don't know what he's going to provide when he does. You know, that could be one of the answers to filling in for Dylan Barrero, in addition to Ejmyr, in addition to Ima Boateng, but we don't know yet. It's hard to say. Again, hard to say, you know, when he's going to be back too. So I wouldn't surprise me either if that's an area they do address, and they do have some flexibility to do so with Barrero being put on the season-ending injury list. I believe they can replace him with a U-22 initiative player. Of course, they need to figure out how that works long term, but if they bring someone in on loan, for example, that could be a really good option for the Revolution. They do have that flexibility to play around there. So with the summer coming up, it'll be very interesting to see how the Revs decide to address this, or if they end up using that spot somewhere else.
Yeah, and the roster rules kind of make it complicated to figure out anything in this league, of course. But I think there was a report that came out. I forget exactly who it was, but it sounded like the Revs would be able to fill someone in that spot, in that U-22 slot, now that Barrero's on the injured reserve. So will the Revs use it? I don't know. And if they do, it would be a situation where, you know, we'd have to figure out what to do with him at the end of the season when Barrero comes back. So it gets complicated, but, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and my guess, too, is, you know, you look at the Revolution's DP situation. Gustavo Bo's contract's up at the end of the season. I'm not sure he's back next year. So the Revolution, in theory, could say, okay, well, we're going to move him from Gustavo Bo. We could sign a U-22 guy long-term and then use our third DP slot on a young DP, so we have the three U-22 slots instead of the one, and then that solves that. But my guess, based on how Bruce Arena practices, is that he's not going to want to tie his hands like that, that he wouldn't want to put himself in a situation where, you know, assuming they are moving on from Gustavo Bo after the season, they can't go out and sign a senior DP. So my assumption is that's not how he's going to act, that he'll, you know, try to do something short term that doesn't tie their hands, but it'll be definitely one of the things to watch. And with that flexibility, it would be a shame if the Revs didn't find a way to use it somehow this season, especially with how good the team's looking. You know, you want all hands on deck for a potential run at the title this year.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I was, you know, I was thinking as the summer, you know, comes up here, we're going to see really where the Revs are. They've got a couple of road games coming up, so we'll kind of see how things shake out there. But if the Revs are looking like they are competing for a top spot, if they're competing for top of the East or top of the table, then, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some reinforcements coming in the summer just to bolster the lineup a little bit. Is it going to be a like-for-like kind of Tejan slash Dylan Barrero type player? I'm not sure. But, yeah, I think if we're looking like we're competing for trophies, there's going to be some moves.
Yeah, I think we saw, you know, 2 years ago when the Revolution won the Supporter Shield, they didn't make any moves in the summer, and you always have to wonder if they're one player away from getting over that hump. So it would be disappointing if they didn't do that this year with how well they're playing, especially if it keeps up. And I would expect that they would do something. We do have a lot of listener questions, so I will jump into those. Before we do, I want to take a quick minute to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Galacho Kits. Galacho Kits is the go-to place to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does the selection. And if you head to GalachoKits.com today, you can save 15% off your order using the code REVSRECAP. That's a REVSRECAP at checkout for 15% off your order at GalachoKits.com. Andy, you ready for questions?
Always.
All right, first up from Thomas E. Thumb on Twitter. He says, I can't believe no one wanted Boateng just a few months ago. Is he arguably one of our most important players?
It's baffling to me that, A, that Bruce Arena let Boateng walk in the offseason. And it's even more baffling to me that all the other teams could pick him up in free agency, and none of them did. He's been absolutely phenomenal for the Revs, even last year in a substitute role, and he seems to have picked up his game even a little bit more this year. I think he started the last three matches, and he's played a ton of minutes over that time period. So, you know, I don't know what more you can ask for a guy you're basically paying the senior minimum to.
Yeah, it's crazy to me too. And he was making $225,000 last year, which I thought was still pretty cheap for what he was providing, even as a super sub. And I thought going into this season, you know, his role would be more of a super sub again. And again, at $225,000, that's not a bad deal. So I was shocked when the Revs didn't pick up his option and basically seemed ready to move on from him. And I was more shocked when he came back at the senior minimum salary. It's definitely a steal for the Revs to have Boateng on the supplemental roster, not counting as their salary cap, and now being a key starter for this team. And with Dylan Barrero out, you know, his importance to this team becomes that much bigger. And we've seen it these past few games how well he's played as a starter, you know, going 90 minutes in some of these games. It's an absolute steal for the Revs. And again, another week where it's just shocking to see. We're reminded how shocking it is that he was available as a free agent this summer and nobody signed him. On that note, Porter on Discord asked, do you think Emo played himself into the starting 11?
I mean, I think for the, at least in the short term, yes. You know, without Barrero in the lineup, I think if Bruce is going to roll out with wingers, I think he's kind of worked himself into the first choice conversation there. And he deserves it, right? We've seen him in the last couple of weeks really be kind of a menace in the attack. What I loved about him in last night's matchup was he was starting to do those sorts of things that Barrero had been doing, right? He'd been cutting inside. He'd been trying to find ways to get into the box a little bit more. We know that he's really good at getting to the end line and putting it across, and he did plenty of that last night as well. But I saw a couple of instances of him, you know, making a smart run kind of into the box and trying to find some service from either Carlos Gil or from someone on the wings. So if he can keep adding that to his game, I don't see him leaving the lineup anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can bench him the way he's playing right now. If he keeps playing like this, he's a kind of a guaranteed starter, I think, with Barrera out. And he should have had an assist last night, if not for Carlos Gil's shot being saved that led to DeJuan Jones's goal. So he's been playing really, really well these past two games. And absolutely, he's a locked-in starter for me as long as he keeps playing like this. And you know, part of it's not having many options, but part of it, too, is he's playing so well that even if they did have more options, I'm not sure you could bench him. Porter on Discord asked the opposite question about the opposite wing. Do you think Esmir has played himself out of the starting 11?
I don't know that he has necessarily played himself out of the starting 11. I tweeted out last night that I thought he had a couple of tough moments. I was thinking of a few specific spots where he, you know, I think he gets bullied off the ball by a defender at one point. The Reds were building up a pretty promising attack, and he receives the ball, and he just kind of gets bumped into and loses it. Later in the match, I think, you know, I don't know how much I can blame him for this one, but a cross comes over his way and it's a little bit hot and he just kind of mishandles it over the touchline. So there's a couple instances where I think he's, you know, he's a young player and he's still growing. So we kind of need to, I think, maybe give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit. But yeah, I'm not quite ready to say that he should be out of the lineup, but, you know, we'll need to see a little bit more from him if he's going to stay in the lineup when the other wingers get healthy.
Yeah, I don't think he's played himself out of the starting lineup. I think he's shown improvement over the season. You know, your concerns are the same as the ones that I had at the beginning of the season, that he's can be bullied off the ball. But at the same time, I thought in this game, you know, he had a lot of good moves too. There was times where he was able to dribble past guys, where he had good combination plays with the rest of the team. And I think you kind of have to take the good with the bad right now. He's a young guy, you know, not the biggest guy. You know, physically he can be bullied off the ball, but tactically he's a really solid player. And yes, he makes some mistakes, but I thought I was actually kind of impressed from him this game. Maybe my expectations are a little bit lower from him from what I saw in some of the earlier games, but I thought he played pretty well this game. And I think as the season's gone on, he's, you know, taken steps forward and should continue to earn minutes. You know, when everyone's healthy, is he a guaranteed starter? No, but I wouldn't say he's played himself out of the starting lineup, especially with the injuries that the Revolution have. I don't know necessarily who you start over him. I think we have some questions that we'll talk more about that later. But I thought he played well enough to keep getting minutes and potentially keep getting starts.
Yeah, I think we have opposite viewpoints. I think you maybe had lower expectations or were more impressed, and maybe I had higher expectations and were a little less impressed. But, you know, that doesn't mean that he's not in a good spot in that kind of middle ground. And, you know, to your point, I love his, you know, his ability on the ball. He seems like he's got good tactical awareness. I did see him, you know, doing some good interplay with players on the wings as well. And, you know, he seems like he is good with the ball at his feet. So, you know, I don't want it to sound like I'm coming off too harshly on him, because I do like him as a player. But, yeah, just a few nitpicks from last night for me.
And Tyler O'Brien on Twitter says, how concerned should we feel about the dumb giveaways in midfield, particularly from Polster? I feel like a better team capitalizes on those errors.
Yeah. There was, I don't know, maybe like a 5 or 10 minute stretch where he looked rough out there. And that's really uncharacteristic of Polster, right? He had a couple of giveaways. I think he was dispossessed in that stretch there. And he had a couple of passes that were not sharp and ended up being interceptions and led to some pretty good chances. But, you know, I think that is, it's uncharacteristic of him, A, and B, it's also kind of his bit of a slow reaction. The whole team had a slow reaction. There was a tactical shift after the Revs scored their first goal. If you watch the first 10 or so minutes of this match, Toronto is setting their line of confrontation, which is basically where on the field they decide they're going to start pressuring you when you have the ball. They set that at the midfield line for about the first 10 minutes. The Revs scored, and then all of a sudden it's kind of full court press, to borrow a basketball term, right? They're pressing all the way up the field, and I don't think the Revs handled that particularly well, any of them really. There was a big chance that comes, I want to say, in like the 18th minute or so, where Buck tries to pass to Polster. And he just kind of, he hits it, but he leaves it too far away from him. I think Polster assumes there's someone behind him that he's attempting to pass to, and there's just no one there. And I think Insigne manages to find the ball there, and he tries to chip it in from about 35 yards, which luckily for us, it did not go in. But I think the whole team had a hard time with that. But, you know, Polster certainly was a big part of that with a couple of key giveaways.
I think you bring up a key point too with Buck, because I think it wasn't just Polster. Polster was the most obvious one, but there were other giveaways.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, not to say that he didn't have a tough 10 minutes, but if you go back and you look at the rest of his game, he actually ends up having a pretty decent game, Polster. I have it written in my notes somewhere, but I want to say so he's 52 of 59 overall passing. And he was only dispossessed the one time, 13 recoveries. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's a pretty Matt Polster game. It's just that the mistakes he did make were particularly impactful in that, you know, 15-minute stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little bit worrying to me to see the amount of giveaways they had there. You make a great point about the tactical shift and the Revs not adjusting to it. But you know, I wouldn't be too concerned yet because I agree with you. It's uncharacteristic from Polster. But again, I do think it wasn't just him. There was that Buck giveaway. There were other players that had giveaway. Those were the ones that those three, the two Polster ones and the Buck ones stood out to me the most. But they weren't the only ones that were kind of making those mistakes in that period. And they did settle down eventually after that. You know, there was one point where I was concerned if Polster was going to do that again, that maybe it was time to make a sub at halftime and switch things up. It just wasn't going to be his game. But he did settle down, to his credit, and played pretty well after that.
Yeah.
And still on that point, Porter on Discord asked or says Polster looked shaky early on, but got better in the second half, as we noted. And then he says, do you think Buck could play a six role with Blessing as an eight and maybe bring Polster off the bench?
I think he could in a pinch, right? I think my preference is still to have Polster as the six. But, you know, I've liked everything I've seen from Buck this season. I think I don't have it up in front of me, but I want to say he had the second highest FOTMOB rating of any of the Rebs players behind Duan Jones, and you know he got the goal, so that's going to bump his rating up quite a bit. I thought he was, you know, aside from, you know, that giveaway that we just mentioned and maybe a few other spots, I thought he looked solid tonight, both, you know, in distribution and defensively. So I wouldn't be mad if we used Buck as the six, but you know I still think that Polster's probably got a leg up on him there, and I like him a little, you know, I like him a little further forward doing some more distribution. So
I agree with you. I like the interchange that Buck and Polster have and their ability to kind of take turns getting forward. And I think if you put Blessing there instead of Polster, you're stuck with Buck playing further back and limiting his offensive contributions. The other thing I'll say, too, is, you know, we're concerned about some of Polster's shakiness in this game, some of his giveaways. My one knock on Blessing is that Blessing has some pretty bad giveaways in the middle of the field. You go back to that LAFC game in particular, he had one that led to a goal. And, you know, when you talk about what happens against better teams, I think we saw that in the LAFC game. When you're having, you know, giveaways in midfield, teams can capitalize on that. But to me, if your concern is with Polster's kind of giveaways, I think Blessing has that same problem and maybe more pronounced of a way, too. So I like Blessing as an eight. I like him, you know, rotating in when guys are out injured. I also think that when we're talking about who can fill in for Barrero and who can play on the wings, that Blessing was a guy that could play on the wings in the past. He has a lot of pace. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing him get some minutes on the wings to see what he can do there. But to me, if the concern is Polster's couple of giveaways, I don't think that putting in Blessing, who I think has been more consistent with his giveaways, is the answer.
Yeah, right. I think we all like Blessing for what he provides, which is, you know, kind of a relentless energy. And, you know, he does do pretty nice things with distribution in the midfield. But you're right. He does give the ball away cheaply sometimes. And that's kind of built into the kind of player he is. So I'm not sure that putting him in a further defensive spot is really the best idea. I like the idea of putting him on the wings, right? He played on the wing in Kansas City, I think. I don't know how much he played on the wing in LA, if any. But he was playing a little further up the pitch. So, you know, he could fit in there, to your point. But yeah, I'm not ready to take Polster out and just have Buck and Blessing in there.
And we got a couple of comments/jokes about the commentators last night. I don't know if you noticed, but they called Esmer got subbed out, and then they called No Buck Esmer a couple times, and they called Justin Renick's Esmer. Also, Alfred on Twitter says, despite Esmer continuing to play 20 minutes after he's been subbed out, how would you rank Brandon Baez's performance on Lorenzo Insigne?
So yes, I know I did notice that, and I was reading around elsewhere comments on Reddit or whatever, and it wasn't just that. It sounds like the commentators had a hard time with player names last night. I think they a couple times referred to Shane O'Neill as Sean O'Neill. I think they missed a couple of other names, so maybe not the best performance from Apple MLS season pass announcers in that game. But, you know, I thought both the fullbacks, both By and Jones, did a pretty good job at, you know, kind of pocketing the big Italian stars, right? You know, they are a team, Toronto's a team that really could use, you know, kind of a central attacking focal point. But they're instead a team that has kind of two high-powered attacking wingers that they really like to use and drag inside. So a lot of their focal point in the attack kind of comes up the flanks through Bernardeschi or through Insigne. And so, you know, By and Jones were both tasked with a pretty heavy load trying to stop those guys from not just, you know, running up the flanks, but also cutting inside and kind of interplay in the midfield there. So they had a lot of work to do, but I think they both did pretty well. I think Insigne had the most expected goals, but he also took like 7 or 8 shots in this game. So, you know, they were pretty low quality chances. And, you know, I think you got to give credit where it's due to both fullbacks in this game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I thought both of them had a really good game. And, you know, despite the fact that they were up a lot of the time, they were really involved in the attack throughout this one, but still managed to do a really good job locking down Insigne, Bernardeschi, Larea to a lesser extent. When he got forward, he was a dangerous player. But I thought the Revs did a really, really good job. Brandon Byan, DeJuan Jones in particular, locking those guys down. And once again, you wonder how they managed to get forward as much as they do and still do that in a game like this.
Yeah. To your point about them continuing to get forward, I don't. If you guys go and check my Twitter, I retweeted this, but there's basically a heat map of where all the Revs' actions happened on the field. And to my point, my key takeaway point, they did not shy away from continuing to use the wings, and a lot of that came through Bai and Jones up the wings. So the middle of the field they did use, but I think about the same as they usually do, right? So the Revs are a pretty wing heavy team. They have those fullbacks they like to push forward. They have those wingers that they like to use. So, you know, they got plenty of use in the attack as well, both of those guys.
Tyler O'Brien on Twitter wants to know which of the three Esmirs was the best Esmir.
Let's give it to original Esmir, right? Not to, I think.
I thought Buck, when he had some time on the wing, looked pretty good. I'll give him some credit too.
Yes.
Alvin Eats on Twitter wants to know, what do you think Bobby Wood, Jozy Altidore, and Bruce Arena talk about when they all hang out? I don't know what you think, but I'm going to assume it's not Trinidad and Tobago.
No, it certainly couldn't be. No, that they must talk about anything but that. Just try to avoid the topic.
New England Till I Die on Twitter says, 11 games into the season, who has been the best offseason acquisition between Romney, Blessing, and Wood?
This is a tough question for me. I saw this on Twitter last night, and I spent some time thinking about it. I think the best acquisition for me is still going to be Romney, just because he's been ever present on that back line, and the Revs have been, you know, I think, much improved defensively this year. You know, I think he deserves a lot of credit for not only, you know, kind of shoring up the defense with Kessler, but also having to kind of like learn a new center back pairing when Andrew Farrell came back and when Kessler went out. So I you know, I think I'm going to give him, you know, the top spot, but Wood has been a real pleasant surprise, I'll say. You know, he got his third goal last night. I don't think we can complain too much about his work rate. I don't think we can complain too much about his holdup. So, you know, it was kind of a tough decision. And then, of course, Blessing's also been good. You know, we just haven't seen as much of him. But for me, it's going to be Romney. But it was a tough decision.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the logic is the same. And Romney's just been ever present this season, played really, really well as a center back, stepped right in like he'd been part of this team forever. So it's got to be Romney for me. We also, you know, Wood has been fantastic. We don't know what his salary is. I think that if you told me his salary was, you know, close to the league minimum, he might enter that conversation. But he was making $1 million last year with Salt Lake. And if his salary is anything close to that, then I think it's still easily Romney for me, because as good as Wood has been, I still don't know that he's a $1 million player. My assumption is he took a heavy pay cut, but until we know what that is, it's got to be Romney for me.
Right. I bet he took a pay cut. But, you know, if he hasn't played every match, and if he gets more minutes going forward, I don't see any reason to think he should stop scoring the way he has. So maybe we'll see how this shakes out at the end of the season. But I won't be surprised if he puts up 10 goals this year.
No, and if you told me that when they first signed him, I would have said you're crazy.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
I think he's put up 10 goals once in his career.
Right.
And that was a very, very long time ago. Hussan Kawaf on Twitter says, you know you have a great team when you lose multiple stars for injuries and you still do not miss a beat. Agree with that. And then he says, Bo was not on the injury report and does not seem like he got a new injury. According to somebody on Rev's Twitter, he was in Disney World. How committed is he to the team? There's no confirmation of that. I don't necessarily believe that. I don't know if you have any response to how committed he is to the team. I don't put any stock in him being in Disney World from one person tweeting that somebody saw him.
If he is at Disney, you know, maybe we can talk about it, but I have no confirmation that he was anywhere in particular. you know, he's, I don't know that it's a commitment thing, right? He's an older player now. He's picked up some injuries. You know, I don't think we can knock him for being injured. So, you know, I think his commitment is adequate.
Yeah. I mean, there's been every game, there's been somebody that we didn't expect to see injured that wasn't on the injury report that's been out. There's always somebody that's surprising us, which is unfortunate, but I don't take anything in particular away from Gustavo Bo being out this game. And I assume it was some sort of injury that maybe he got in training or re-aggravated or whatnot. Jeff Lemieux said he's still working his way back from the injury that kept him out recently, which is, you know, a little bit unusual since he played last week. But at the same time, I people pick up knocks in training, people re-injure themselves in training, people have a setback. It could have been anything. Husan also said, looking back at how late Gustavo Bo joined the team this season and his overall contribution to the team so far this year, considering his salary, is it not time to move on from both him and Josie by next season or maybe even earlier? And Thomas E. Thumb on Twitter also says, serious question, why is Altidore on the team?
Great question. I don't know, at the salary that Josie's getting paid, I'm not sure what he's bringing that I'm not seeing, maybe that Bruce is seeing. You know, that said, I actually thought he looked perhaps the most motivated I've ever seen him on the Revs in last night's game. And when I say that is, you know, I saw him making proactive runs. I saw him not just reacting to the game and kind of receiving passes and just trying to, you know, lay the ball off or get knocked down. He did that, you know, one or two times, but he was also making, he was trying to get himself involved. He played 30 minutes, 29 minutes. I think he had 18 touches is what I have written down here, which, you know, maybe that doesn't sound like a lot, but the Revs were up 2-0 at that point. So there, you know, may not have been a huge need to use a center forward. I think that paces out for higher than Bobby Wood was involved in his 60 minutes. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if I buy into the whole revenge game narrative, but it did seem from the eye test like there was a little extra motivation from him last night.
I agree with you. It did seem like he was a little bit more motivated. There was more hustle from him in this game, I thought. It just seemed like he was more into the game than we've seen from him recently. With that said, you know, his salary is insane. We don't know exactly what the Revs are contributing, but my assumption is they're probably contributing close to max TAM for him. And you know, next year Toronto's not contributing anything to his salary, so it's all on the Revs. While this was a little bit of a better performance than we've seen from him, I thought I still don't know why he's on the team. Other than the fact that he's guaranteed a lot of money, and I think the Revolution would rather give him as much opportunity as possible to see him come good on that salary rather than just eat it and have it be dead money. Not dead in the fact that they'd have it free from the salary cap, but just money that they'd have to eat. So I think that's why he's still on the team. But at the same time, I think the Revolution could much better use that salary elsewhere. As far as Gustavo Bo, I still think Gustavo Bo is the best goal scorer on this Revolution team until somebody proves otherwise. And you know, we've seen him this year. He's still a very good player. Unfortunately, at his age, he does get injured more. But I assume that he'll contribute a lot more to this team this season, and that the Revolution will probably move on in the offseason, because at his age, it doesn't make sense to keep him as a DP. So unless he's willing to take a serious pay cut, I assume this is probably his last season on the Revolution. I know he's wanted to go back to, I think, Argentina to play, and you know, he might have that opportunity after this year. But I still think Bo has a lot to offer the team this season, and then probably for both parties, unless he's going to take a big pay cut, it doesn't make sense to bring him back next year.
Yeah, and you know, to the question, why is he still here? He's still here because his contract runs up at the end of the year, and so just from a, you know, business side of things, it doesn't make a ton of sense to cut him when you have, you know, just a few months left on the salary before, you know, you don't have to pay anything for him to not be on the team if that's what you want. That said, I still think he contributes. You know, we've seen him score a couple of goals this year, and he scored that one, I'm forgetting, against the opponent, maybe it was Nashville, where he blasts it, you know, kind of near post. And I don't know that there's really, other than Carlos Heel, anyone on this team that I feel confident can make that kind of shot. So, you know, until the Revs find someone else who have that kind of, you know, goal scorer's instinct and who have that kind of precision in shooting, I don't know that it makes sense to cut them.
And Mike Dion on Twitter had a question about Bobby Wood. He said, is Wood playing well enough to keep starting even when a healthy Vrioni and Gustavo Bo are available?
And, you know, that's a tough question because he has been in the minutes he's played, you know, he's got 3 goals. I don't know exactly how many starts he has, but it's not that many. So he's been scoring at a rate that I would accept as, you know, kind of a, maybe not locked and loaded starter, but as someone I'd feel comfortable with in the starting lineup. I don't think if both of those guys are healthy that he becomes first choice, but, you know, he's a guy that plays hold up pretty well, and it seems like neither Bo nor Vrioni are particularly well equipped to do that. So, you know, maybe that's a skill set that keeps him in the starting lineup for longer.
Yeah, his minutes per goal right now are 167 minutes, which is really good. He's almost, you know, more than a goal every other game. And on top of that, he's got 2 assists, both primary. So he's right. In his 502 minutes of play, 3 goals, 2 assists is really impressive. That's almost a goal or assist per 90 minutes, just shy of that. So he's definitely played well enough to stay in the starting lineup. You know, I think when Gustavo Bo and Giacomo Vrioni are healthy, Bruce Arena needs to try to find a way to play the two of them together, which does put Bobby Wood on the bench. I think there's a lot of minutes to go around. We, you know, we talk about Bo and his age. You know, he's not a 90-minute player every game. There's plenty of opportunities for Wood to play. Giacomo Vrioni, he's been consistently getting a lot of injuries too. It seems like he might be a little bit injury prone, or, you know, just dealing with training or whatever it is. So there's plenty of minutes to go around. But I do think Bruce Arena needs to at least try to find a way to have Vrioni and Bo on the field at the same time, which would mean Wood sits. With that said, I completely agree with your point that Bobby Wood is, you know, offers a hold-up quality in his play that Vrioni and Bo don't have. And, you know, until I see otherwise, I feel like Bobby Wood is probably a better complement to Gustavo Bo than Vrioni is, and he's also probably a better compliment to Vrioni than Gustavo Bo is. Right. Both Vrioni and Bo like to play facing goal, and Wood is comfortable either way. He's comfortable holding up the ball and playing with his back to goal. Vrioni and Bo don't seem to be. Maybe I just haven't seen it from Vrioni yet. Maybe that changes, but I think Bo plays really well off of a guy like Wood, and I think Vrioni probably would play pretty well off a guy like Wood, and I don't know yet that Vrioni and Bo play well off each other because we haven't seen it.
Yeah, and they both, you know, both Bo and Vrioni feel like players that want, you know, someone to help set them up, and they both feel like they'd probably benefit from playing next to another forward that likes to set people up and has that skill set. So, you know, we could very well see Bobby would stay in the lineup, stay in the starting lineup if that's not something that they can do themselves between Bo and Vrioni.
Sticking with the strikers, Derek Terrell on Twitter says, how do you rank our 5 strikers from worst to best?
I saw this one. I think it, for me, I'm still going to put Vrioni at the top. And I, you know, this was the toughest part of it for me. Just because we know what Bo can provide. I just talked up his, you know, his kind of goal scorers. You know, he has that, you know, that bit of venom in his shots that I don't know that anybody else has. But it came down for me to just what the potential of Vrioni could be. He's now got 3 goals on the season. He hasn't played a ton of minutes. And I think if we can kind of find a way to get him into a rhythm, he, for me, seems like the one that's going to score the most goals of the group. Then for me, it's probably Bo. Then, unfortunately, just for no good reason at all, apparently, Wood ends up in the 3 spots. And then it's got to be Renix and then Altidore for me.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm going to put Bo at the top because it is all about potential for Vrioni right now. And until I mean, we've seen some moments from him certainly recently. I don't want to take that away. But until we see more, I got to keep Bo at the top for what he's done for this team and his ability to kind of score from anywhere on the pitch for the Revs. And after that, it's tough to go between Wood and Vrioni. I, like you, think that Vrioni is going to be the better player. Wood has probably contributed more so far to this team. I might have put Vrioni at 2, but it's not really fair to Wood. Wood at 3, and then, like you, Renix at 4, and I have to put Altidore last just be, you know, until he can show some semblance of the player that he was, you know, 5 years ago, which even when we're seeing some moments from him, it's nothing like that.
And honestly, the difference between Renix and Altidore at the end there is not as great as it seems, right? It's a lot of it is based on salary differences for me there. I think they both contribute kind of similarly. I think Renix probably has a little bit more hustle in his game. Yes. But at the back end there, it's all salary.
That's what it is for me. It's the hustle that Renix puts out there, because we've seen games where Altidore seems to have tired after 10 minutes and coming as a sub and hasn't done enough for me, where you never question Renix on that. So that's where it falls for me. Mike D on Twitter wants to know, with Blessing looking up to speed again, where do we play Bo, Ima Boateng, Rioni, Buck, and Blessing in an 11? And can you?
Wow, there's a lot of players. So I think... we could see the Revs official social media put out their lineup, and it looked like they lined up in a 4-3-3. I think that probably was a 4-3-3 slash hybrid 4-2-3-1 throughout the game. But in a 4-3-3, I don't mind a three-man midfield that is, Polster and Blessing and Heal. And maybe you can, stick Buck in there to fill a couple of those spots. But if you're going to play that way, then I think you're probably looking at a lone striker. That kind of makes it tough to pick and choose between the strikers you have on the roster. And then, of course, you'll need wingers like we played last night. If the Revs want to go with a two forward formation, that kind of does make Blessing kind of in a weird spot between Buck and Blessing in the midfield to kind of fill one spot. So it's tough. I mean, it's. I don't want to say it's an embarrassment of riches at this point, because the Revs have had so many injuries and have had to use so much depth. But there's plenty of guys who can step in.
Yeah, and again, they have so much depth this year that I think there's going to be a lot of rotation throughout the seasons if guys do get healthy. So there are plenty of minutes to go around. How do you fit all of them on the same field, on the field at the same time? Not so easily. I do think it's a question of do Buck and Blessing. Do one of them play on the wing? And both of them have shown Buck has shown some capability of doing that. Blessing earlier in his career played there. So I don't know if that's the route that Bruce Arena wants to go. I think he might be better off playing guys that are more natural in those positions or been playing there more regularly recently. But if you are going to fit all those guys in the field, you probably have to put one of those two on the wing. Again, this is assuming, I guess, that we're keeping Polster in the lineup, which I think both of us agree we should. If you're keeping Polster in the lineup, I think it's a question of, does Blessing or Buck go on the wing? And then, maybe if you're playing a one striker system, do you put Bo on the wing too? But then you don't have a place for Ima. So there's, I'm talking myself out of there being a good option to put all of them on the field at the same time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've looked through a couple of different possible lineups, and it always, to me, feels like there's a guy that I wish I could put in that just doesn't fit in any given lineup. And that's a good thing for the Revs to have, enough good players if they don't have enough starting spots.
I mean, how many times last year did you look at the bench and think there really wasn't a game changer on the bench, or maybe the only game changer was Ima Boateng? I think that's a good thing this year, that there are a lot of guys that could be starting that you can't necessarily fit in the lineup. Because at least for me last year, there were a lot of games where you look at that Revolution bench and want to change the game. And outside of Ima Boateng, if he was there wasn't really an option. And that shouldn't be the case this season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, we've got more depth this year, and I think Arena did a good job in the offseason kind of filling the necessary holes, and that's given us the depth that we need to keep things going.
And we kind of already touched on this one, but Matt Klayman on Twitter says, how do you think the Revs will start at left wing going forward in replacement of Barrero? Boateng has played well there recently, but do you think he will stay there, or will it be by committee?
I think Boateng has worked himself into the starting lineup for the time being. I think Bruce likes to roll with a hot hand as well, and I don't think we've seen anything from Boateng that says he shouldn't continue to start. If his form dips, or, last year it seemed like a concern was, that he wasn't quite a 90-minute player. He would be good off the bench. He'd have all that energy off the bench. But when we tried to start him, he just couldn't impact the game for the full 90 minutes. So if we start to see that kind of creep back in, maybe it starts to be by committee. But for now, based upon the last three games, I think you keep rolling with him.
And he also wants to know if the Revs will consider bringing in another winger in the summer transfer window. You touched on this one, but do you think that happens?
Do I think it should happen? Yes. Do I think it will happen? You never know. Given Bruce Arena's track record, he might bring in, an old 35-year-old former U.S. men's national teamer to play left back or something like that. We don't know. I stipulated on Twitter earlier in the week that I think maybe Paul Ariola could be a good fit. I know that the Galaxy were possibly looking at trading for him at the trade deadline a couple weeks ago. I think he picked up an injury in last night's game, so maybe that's off. But I think that kind of player could make a lot of sense for the Revs, right? Someone who has not just the ability to kind of like get the ball and speed up the wings and interplay with, you know, with an outside back, but someone who has the ability to take players on the dribble and shoot. You know, I still think that's a component of the Revs roster that is missing without Barrero. So I would love to see them go out and get someone who can offer that kind of dynamism up front.
Yeah, I think they should, and I'm also not convinced that they will, but it will be interesting to see what they do. I do think that, you know, this is a situation where it would be great if the Revs could look at an opportunity to get someone short term. Like, is there somebody in Europe that could do with a 6-month loan for the Revolution to just play through the season, to, you know, kind of deal with the fact that the Revolution have this spot, this U22 spot that they can use but may not have it next year? So I think they should go get a winger. I'm kind of 50-50 on whether they do. There are other areas of the field that they might want to address. I think the center back depth with Henry Kessler out long term, I'm not completely sold that Omar Gonzalez could fill in if another guy got injured for any significant period. I don't know about McCoon yet, whether he could fill in. I think that's an area they might want to address. I think at fullback, they brought in Ben Sweat. I don't know that anyone's sold on him yet. But if it was me, I would definitely try to bring in a winger this summer.
Yeah, and to that point, I actually, you know, I'm not convinced that winger is the position of greatest need. I think that's, you know, if they bring in a player of Dylan Barrero's kind of qualities, that would help lift the team's ceiling the most. But, you know, we are dangerously close to having, you know, not great options in both outside back and center back. So, yeah, to your point, I think there's positions that also need addressing, not just wings.
Paulo S. on Twitter says, Jones is my man of the match, but Farrell has also looked very good and been so solid. He's playing better than Henry Kessler for sure. More of a statement than a question, but do you agree that Farrell has been better than Kessler?
I don't know that I necessarily agree that he's been better, but I think he's done an absolutely admirable job since coming in. And, you know, this is something we've seen from Farrell for years. You know, he's a veteran in this league. He knows what he's doing. He's maybe lost a little bit of the speed he had, you know, 10 years ago, but he's still got enough of it to be able to make those recovery runs. But mostly he's just, you know, he's a smart veteran. He knows where to position himself. He knows when to go in for tackles, you know, and he's been a little less, you know, mistake prone this season in his last couple of games than we saw him last year, right? Both he and Kessler actually gave up a lot of penalties last year. So, you know, I'm very pleased with what I've seen from Farrell so far this year. And, you know, we're lucky that, you know, with Kessler out, we have a player of Andrew Farrell's quality to kind of fill in. But I'm not quite ready to say he's been better yet.
I agree with you. I think I think both of them have had, or Kessler had a really good season until he was injured. And I think Farrell's filled in really, really well. I was a little bit down on Kessler after last year. I thought Kessler had an off season, you know, both with injuries and just his general form. But I think he was fantastic to start the season and kind of made me eat my words that I was predicting that he would be benched by the end of the year and Farrell would be starting. Of course, now he's benched because of his injury and Farrell's starting. Not how I saw that going. But, you know, I think both of them have been really, really good, and I wouldn't rate one over the other at this point because Kessler, to me, really kind of proved me wrong that he did really well this season after what I thought was kind of a poor season from him last year. Any Revs UK, Mike on Twitter says he feels that when Bruce took Bobby out of the game, Rioni should have seen the field play. Was it just Bruce giving his guy Josie some minutes, or does he not trust Rioni despite him hitting a bit of form before the injury?
I mean, I think it's a thing where the Revs were up a goal at that point, you know, and we didn't get to see, again, I don't necessarily believe in this revenge game narrative, but, you know, we didn't get to see him, Josie, play against Toronto last season. The Revs didn't play Toronto until, I want to say, mid-July of last year. They played them twice, I think once in July and maybe once in August. But just before that first meeting, the Revs loaned Josie down to Puebla, and, you know, it did seem like he was more motivated in this game. So maybe Bruce just, you know, could see that Josie wanted to maybe stick one to his old team that cut him in the offseason and decided to go that way. You know, and we still have Vrioni coming back from that knock he picked up in training. So, you know, for me, it's not a horrible decision. Of course, I'd rather see Vrioni out there in general, but I'm not too mad about it.
Yeah, I think it was purely situational. You touched on it. The Revs were up a goal at that point. I think if the Revs were down a goal or tied, we would have seen Rioni, assuming he was fit enough to play, over Josie Altidore. I think what we saw from the Revs in this game, they were playing really well. They were playing well off Bobby Wood, who's more of a similar type of striker to Josie Altidore. I think if you bring Rioni in that situation, the style of play kind of changes for the reasons we talked about earlier. He's not really a hold-up striker. He's a guy that likes running at people and having guys set him up. And when you're playing with the lead, I think Bruce Arena is more comfortable playing in the style that they were in, with more of a hold-up guy up top. And on paper, Altidore is more of that guy. Now, if it was up to me and Rioni was healthy, would I put in Rioni anyways? Yes, because I don't trust Josie. But I do think Josie put in the effort in this game. And what wasn't the most shining performance, I think he did enough. And I understand Bruce's kind of thought process of putting Josie on when this team is winning. Kind of allows them to keep playing the way they're playing and probably puts them in a better position to hold on to a lead than putting Rioni on, which is what you would have done if you were chasing a goal.
Yeah, and to the point you made about Wood kind of being involved as holdup, I think it was Sam Minton on Twitter, and if you're not following him, go check him out. He tweeted out the pass map from this match, and if you look at where the architecture of these passes are, you see the striker is kind of tucked in almost right next to Carlos Heel. And they were kind of using Bobby Wood in kind of like a buildup type of way. I don't know that that's necessarily a super strong suit of Altidore's, but Vrioni, I think where he's probably best is trying to sneak in behind the back line, timing his runs and just trying to take a ball over the top, which we saw him do to great effect on a couple of his good shots and goals earlier this season. So, it could be a situation where Bruce thought maybe they just wanted someone who could, turn back to goal and receive the ball and, either get knocked down like Josie seems to do a little easily, I think, or maybe lay the ball back off to Heel and let him kind of dictate the tempo from there.
And I do want to quickly jump back to the last question, because there was one point I wanted to make that I forgot to make. And that's just when we're talking about Andrew Farrell, he had one pass in this game in the first half, a fantastic cross-field pass to kind of spring an attack that I didn't really think was part of his repertoire generally. So I wanted to give him credit for that, because that's not usually, when I'm talking about Farrell, not usually something I talk about.
Yes, they made mention of it on the broadcast, and it was a great pass.
On any Revs You Can, Discord also wants to know, how much squad rotation do you feel the Revs will be in, what the Revs will put in place for the game versus Pittsburgh on Tuesday?
I would still expect pretty heavy squad rotation. The team is pretty deep. So, I think the Revs have, a decent set of non-starters that they can play. And I don't know that Bruce is going to want to, with all the injuries we've had, necessarily risk any of the starters playing 90 minutes in Open Cup. It's not a tournament that I feel like he puts a ton of stock into anyways. And, playing a lower division club, I will not be surprised if it's similar to last game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a completely different 11 than what we saw in this game. I don't think any of the guys that started this game, with the exception of maybe Ejmir, will get the start in this one. So I don't think that Bruce Arena will put out anything close to his best 11 against Pittsburgh. If they're playing an MLS team, maybe that changes the calculus a little bit. And that's not to say that the Revolution couldn't lose to Pittsburgh with a B team. They certainly could. But I think Bruce Arena is not going to put out his top lineup, and I expect just about everyone that started this game to not start Tuesday. Mike Collins on Discord says four out of the five games in May are away. Do the Revs finish May at the top of the East? If not, where are they?
I want to say no, they probably won't finish the month at the top of the East. And I only say that because Cincinnati, tied on points with the Revs, has a pretty home heavy May. I want to say three of their four matches are at home. It could be different from that. I have to go back and double check, but I know that they played a home game. They won last night, and I think they have a couple more home games coming up. So just based upon how home road splits tend to go in MLS, and the fact that we're tied on points with Cincinnati, I think it's probably going to, if it's going to split one way, it's probably going to split their way. But that isn't to say that I don't think the Revs can do a good job collecting points. I think they're 3-1-1 on the road this year, or maybe it's just no. Yeah. 3-1-1, three wins. And then they have, of course, had that terrible loss in LA, and then they had the draw in Columbus. So, they've shown that they don't necessarily need to be at home to put together complete performances this year. And it's kind of the same way that they did in 2021, right? They stick around in games, even on the road, and sometimes they are able to put a couple in the net, and if they can put two goals in the net, they're in pretty good shape. So I'm not saying that I think they'll fall too far down the standings, but just based upon Cincinnati being at home a lot in May, I think they may overtake us.
Yeah, I mean the Revs are 6 points above third, so they're tied with Cincinnati, and then after that it's a 6-point drop. I don't think the Revs fall below second at the end of May, but I kind of agree with you. I would tend to think that Cincinnati finishes the month on top and the Revs fall to second. And it's not just the fact that the Revs are on the road. It's a tough schedule. They have Miami on the road. Miami's been playing better lately. I think they've won two in a row. They have Philadelphia on the road. You know, Philadelphia is always a very tough place to play. They're one of the best teams in the league. And they have Atlanta on the road. And we know Atlanta is always an extremely tough place to play. And then, you know, between all that, they have a home game against Chicago, which is kind of a must get 3 points based on that matchup. But there are definitely places where the Revolution will probably drop points this month. And Cincinnati, as you mentioned, have, I think, of the games remaining, I think they do have two more home games this month. Yeah, they're home against Montreal. That's a game that they should probably win. They're home against Columbus. That's a game that they can win. They're on the road to Colorado. Colorado is a tough place to play, but that's not a great team. And then they're on the road to New York City FC, which is always tough. So if I was a betting man, I would say the Revolution probably finished the month in second. But I think it's within their capability to finish in first. It's just it is a very tough schedule the rest of May.
Yes, and I put out an analysis. I've been keeping track of, you know, this is, of course, not a real science that I'm doing here, but the power rankings that come out every week on MLSsoccer.com, they basically are just a panel of experts that come up with a general vibe ranking of all the teams in MLS. I've been keeping track of those throughout the course of the season. And if you plot out the power rankings of the teams that the Revs are playing in the week that they are playing them, we get an average of about, I think it was 15.4. Cincinnati has the same number of points. They played, I think, an extra game on the road, and they have they've played on average by power rankings a tougher set of opponents. I think their average was about 13.3. So, you know, Cincinnati's no slouch. I think they've looked a little maybe touch and go at times, but you know, they're getting results in and against, you know, pretty decent opposition.
And we have one last question, which was directed at me by Sam Minton of the Blazing Musket. He, if you haven't listened to the podcast, I'm a big Tottenham fan. He says, since the match was played in Canada and the announcer mentioned hockey, the Bruins attended the Tottenham game today. Is that the reason they collapsed in the playoffs? So that's it's a pretty mean comment from Sam, but as someone that can recognize how bad Spurs are, I actually was texting with Greg when I saw that they were at the game and told him that if the Bruins wanted to be at a game where they could have a team rub off on them that doesn't choke, they really picked the wrong one. So I can admit it's been a very rough season for Spurs. Andy, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I was trying to look for an opportunity to weave this fact into conversation, but it didn't come up naturally. But I do want to give credit to Bruce Arena for his first win against Bob Bradley since, what do I have here, July 18th of 1998.
It's a long time.
They each other very few times, surprisingly, for being you know, head coaches for so long, and both of them having coached in MLS for so long. But they've only played each other seven times in MLS, and I think three of those were in 1998, because the 2 years before that, Bob Bradley was an assistant coach underneath Bruce Arena. And so the last time that Bruce Arena won was a home game for DC United against Chicago Fire in 1998. And then since then, it's been two draws and two losses. So congrats to him.
That is a great stat. And before we wrap up, where can people find your writing and where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to find my articles, I write one every week, or I try to write one every week, depending on my schedule. But you can find those over at Boston Sports Nation, which is bossportsnation.com. If you click on the little Revolution banner at the top of the page, that'll bring you to all of my content, or you can just go through all the content there. There's a lot of good stuff up on that site. And you can check out my Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Andy Revs Nation. And I post all my articles there, and I post additional analysis there as well.
Well, thanks so much, Andy. I really appreciate your time joining us today. You can follow me at Sean L. Donahue, and of course, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Revolution Recap. If you are not one of the 100 people that have rated us on iTunes, please do on iTunes or Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out our friends in the Blazing Musket. Check out Andy at Boston Sports Nation. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back after, well, I don't know if we'll be back after the Open Cup game, but we'll be back next weekend either way with another podcast.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.